Of the many things we take for granted, being able to see is right up there. It's fundamental to how most of us learn and bond, work and play, and navigate the world. We also take for granted that if the world grows fuzzy, there's an easy and accessible fix for that: glasses or contacts or laser surgery. In fact, most people in the world need glasses at some point in their lives. But in developing countries, by some estimates, some 2 billion people don't have access to the glasses they need. They can't afford them, or optometrists are scarce on the ground, or both. Think about that. 1 out of 4 people on Earth could use glasses, but don't yet have them. Thought experiment. If you wear glasses, go without them for a day. See how that affects your life, and your mood, and your sense of possibility. It's a whole lot harder to see into the future if you can't see. This is Whose Century Is It? A podcast about ideas, trends, and twists shaping the 21st century. I'm Mary Kay Magstad. And I've got to say, as someone who was a foreign correspondent for a couple of decades in Asia with travels in Africa, who has spent a whole lot of time thinking about different challenges in poorer and more remote areas, this was one right in front of me and I didn't see it. Not until I sat down at this year's Skoll Global Forum in Oxford to talk with Jordan Casalow, an optometrist and founder of a nonprofit social enterprise called Vision Spring. It's one of several nonprofits that try to get glasses to people in developing countries who need them. Vision Spring does it by selling glasses at affordable rates, usually 1 or 2 days' wages, in countries where people earn just $1 or 2 a day. I started by asking Jordan how he got drawn into doing this.
When I was a student studying optometry in Boston, I joined an organization called VOSH, which brought eye care to underserved populations in Latin America. And my very first patient was a 7-year-old boy from the School for the Blind. And he thought he was blind, his parents thought he was blind, his teachers thought he was blind. And when we looked at his eyes, we recognized actually he wasn't blind at all, he just needed a very powerful pair of eyeglasses. And I was the lucky person to put those glasses on his face. And when the lenses aligned with his eyes, this blank stare of a blind child transformed into this beautiful smile of joy, and it was a moment that changed both of our lives. This happened in rural Mexico, in the Yucatan Peninsula.
So then to go from that to recognizing, okay, if this kid has glasses, then he has a whole different life, to what this has become, which is you've reached millions of people with this, right?
At this point, we've reached 3.5 million people with affordable eyeglasses. It was actually kind of a long journey, as you can imagine. This boy was one of over 2 billion people in the world whose vision can be improved with eyeglasses. And of those 2 billion people, over 600 million need glasses so strong, like that boy did, they're visually impaired or blind without their glasses. So I recognized for the first time that this was not just an isolated incident. This was a huge issue that profoundly affected the developing world and the people who live there in terms of their capacity to learn, their capacity to work, their capacity to be safe on the roads. And so I started to really try to understand the problem. And that led me, after my graduating, to India, where I worked at the Aravind Eye Hospital for a year, which is really one of the central pillars of the social enterprise space, and learned a great deal from the folks at Aravind. That led me to do work in Africa with a disease called river blindness. That led me to work in more the policy world at the Council on Foreign Relations. I started their global health policy unit. And after doing all of that, I sort of had the experience that I felt I needed to start my own organization. And I started Vision Spring in 2001 to provide eyeglasses to people throughout the world.
It's kind of extraordinary that, I mean, of all of the priorities that have been on the list for decades in terms of development and trying to, you know, lift people out of poverty and give them a better chance, eyeglasses never really made the list. If you'll forgive the pun, why do you think that we had a blind spot to that?
I believe we still have a blind spot. Vision has not had the attention that it needed. And that's actually why we started a new organization called the Alliance, to make the case that vision is a critical input to economic development. This is not just a health issue. This is a global development issue, because it impacts on so many aspects of a person's ability to live up to their full potential, whether it's a child who needs to learn, and if they can't see, they can't learn, or an adult if they need to work, and if they can't see, they can't work. This is an issue that is estimated to drag down the global economy by over $227 billion a year. And it has gotten last year $38 million of support across the globe, whereas things like clean water, energy, we're talking billions of dollars of support. So we're trying to get more attention to this issue area, raise new resources so that we can solve the problem. And that's the other thing about it is we know the solution. It's a 700-year-old technology. It's just about distribution and demand creation, things that we know how to do and we're starting to do them.
So the demand isn't already there just because people are like, I want to be able to see, help me out.
The demand is there physiologically, meaning there are billions of people who can't see, but that demand hasn't been woken up. And so even though people need glasses, a lot of them don't know they need the glasses. And probably a lot of your listeners had that experience when they were children. They got their first pair of glasses and they didn't realize how bad they saw until they put those first pair of glasses on. And suddenly leaves of trees were individual leaves rather than a big green blob.
Have you, I'm sure you have, had a chance to follow up with some of the kids and other folks who've gotten glasses? Have they talked to you about how it's changed their lives? I mean, is there any way to measure, you know, kind of the difference it's made?
Well, there's measurements from an emotional perspective, and then there's measurements from a more technical impact measurement perspective. So I can tell you I have been in many instances with people who have gotten glasses for the first time. Sometimes children, sometimes 40, 50, 60-year-old people who have been visually impaired their whole lives, and they put on a pair of glasses, and literally their knees buckle. They just become so emotional for being able to see for the first time properly. But when it comes to our organization, we have to measure our impact in dollars and cents so that we can ensure donors are putting their resources to something that is going to drive change and drive impact. And we have done some interesting studies that show that a single pair of glasses will increase the average person's income by over $108. It ends up being about a 27-time return on their investment.
$108 in a developing country where that money goes a long way.
These are people who earn $1 or $2 a day. So it increases their productivity by about 34%. So if someone is not able to see and they're in their middle age and they're working and they work with their eyes and hands, like weavers and tailors and artisans, and suddenly you put a pair of glasses on, in that moment they become 34% more productive.
This seems like such a no-brainer. You were saying that it's still a work in progress. You're still appealing to donors to scale this up even more. Why do you think there's some challenge in getting the kind of resources you'd like to have?
It is a no-brainer, but in many people's minds, this is yesterday's problem. They think this problem has been solved because if they need glasses, they get glasses. So it's not something that people are even aware of. They're like, oh my God, I didn't realize that 2 billion people need glasses in the world. And there's also quite a bit of a fixation on innovation and what's the new thing.
So there are other optometrists and ophthalmologists, and maybe you've done this as well, who will like fly into poor villages and developing countries and do operations on cataracts and other sorts of operations on people who are blind. Obviously, that's a much more expensive endeavor. From a sort of a global public health perspective, do you see room for both? Or do you think that maybe more focus should be put on the basics first?
It's a good question. The problem is so big that one of our philosophies at Vision Spring is it's all good, that whatever people are trying to do to solve the problem is good. However, we choose, based on our knowledge, to use a social entrepreneurial approach because we think it's more efficient. And in fact, the research bears that out. There are organizations that collect old glasses, recycle them, and then match them with the needs of people in other parts of the world. The research shows that that costs about $20 per person served of philanthropic capital. Last year in Vision Spring, we sold over 1 million pair of glasses, and the average philanthropic input to do that was under $4. So it's a much more efficient way to use the markets. The other thing that we see is that one of our largest donors are the poorest people in the world, because collectively they pay a few dollars, a few rupees for the glasses, and that adds up to them being participatory in the solution.
So this is your model, that rather than just giving out glasses, you have people pay some of their own money. Is this because then there's a feeling that they'll value it more, or what was your thinking behind doing it this way?
It's a sense that people will value it more, and also it makes us better at what we do. That if we expect people to pay money for the glasses, we have to make sure that we're providing glasses that are aspirational, that are culturally appropriate, and are priced according to the needs and the ability of people to pay. So it puts the onus on us to make sure that we're providing something of value to our customers. Whereas I've had experiences when we were giving glasses away that people would return the glasses and prefer to be blind than to wear glasses that made them look funny or culturally inappropriate.
Huh. Does an example come to mind? What glasses have been handed out that were culturally inappropriate?
One of my favorite stories is, as a student, I went to Choco, Colombia, which is in the western part of Colombia, and it's called Choco because the Choco Indians live there. And there I was with a 40-year-old Choco Indian woman. Her name was Noka, and she had canoed a whole day downriver because she heard a team of American eye doctors were going to come to provide eye care. And she was known as the blind lady in the village. And when we examined her eyes, we understood why. She had a -8 prescription, so she couldn't see the big E on the eye chart. And we gave her first pair of glasses, and she saw 20/20 in an instant. And we were all very proud of ourselves. We gave ourselves high fives. Yeah, we saved another person. And she went back upriver. And a few days later, we were working, and who's there but Noka? And through Indian tongue, Spanish, English, she came back and told us that when she returned to her village, she was ostracized because her glasses looked so funny. And so she asked for a different pair. But she had a very particular prescription, and we told her that we didn't have another pair that matched her prescription. And her complaint was actually quite valid, because when you looked at the glasses we gave her, the only one that matched her prescription was a pair of 1950s cat-eye glasses with rhinestones. And here's this woman who was dressed in traditional...
You buried the lead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Here was this lady who was dressed in traditional Indian garb, wearing 1950s cat-eye glasses with rhinestones, which would have looked cool in the East Village of New York, but just didn't go over well in her village.
So this way they choose what glasses they want, and then they pay for them, and they don't have to just take whatever your organization feels like giving them.
Correct. We have various styles. We have a few different tenets. One is that just because people are poor doesn't mean they deserve second-rate products. And the second is that we believe that vanity is not monopolized by rich people. We realize that no matter where you are and where you live and how much money you have, you care about the way that you look.
So does actually wearing glasses itself ever come across as being culturally a little bit strange, since other people don't have glasses and they're not used to seeing people with glasses?
So there are a number of cultural barriers to wearing glasses. In India, research has shown that 71% of girls of marriageable age will feel they're less marriageable if they wear glasses. In some societies, when kids start wearing glasses, their elderly grandparents will say, those are for rich people, those aren't for village boys or girls. So there are some cultural biases against glasses. This is one of the barriers in this issue of demand creation, and making them culturally appropriate is something that we battle every day.
It sounds like as you've been moving forward, I mean, there's been a lot of uptake. When people find that glasses are available, there might be some initial discomfort, but that the benefits outweigh the disadvantages or the perceived disadvantages.
Clearly, once people have that seeing is believing moment, it's kind of hard to go back. If you need glasses and you can see properly for the first time, you want to see that way again. So despite those cultural barriers, we're making incredible progress.
Have you had any particular issues going into some countries or regions? Like, I know you're doing a lot of work in Africa, India, not China. Is there a reason for that?
We try to work where there are good partners, because one of our other central tenets is that rather than building our own infrastructure to distribute our products, we look for partners who are already in the markets where we want to work, who already have existing distribution networks and infrastructure, and teach them how to incorporate vision into their basket of goods. This problem is a universal problem, so we can literally be anywhere because the problem is everywhere.
Have there been any instances where governments in a particular place said, we don't want this kind of thing here, we can deal with this ourselves, thank you very much?
The only experience that I had, which was pretty early on in our developing Vision Spring, was in Haiti. And it really became more from the ophthalmologic and optometric community than from the government. Even though there aren't enough eye doctors in the world, often they're quite protective about the market. And it's a little unfortunate that even though they have no intent to reach out to these communities, they want to have full control over the marketplace. And so Haiti was a place where we were basically shut down and asked not to pursue our model there.
So what would you like to see happen from here in terms of expansion?
Well, I think there's a number of important things that need to happen. One, I think broadly, the global development community should prioritize putting vision and eyeglasses more central to the global development agenda because it's such a no-brainer. We know it works, it's very cost-effective, and it has outstanding impact in terms of people's lives. We want to see this get the kind of attention that other important health issues like malaria and AIDS and tuberculosis have gotten. The other thing that we need to do is just continue to find partners and continue to expand. It took us 10 years to hit our first millionth customer, 2 years to hit our second, and now we're hitting about 1 million people a year. We want to get that to 2 million, 5 million, 10 million a year, and there's certainly plenty of a market to do that.
You were saying that 2 billion people around the world probably need glasses and don't have them. So this could keep you and others like you busy for most of the rest of the century.
This is a problem that is, in essence, limitless. And that's why we want to try to crowd other people into this effort. We look at vision as not a separate vertical, but as a critical input to important global development issues. So the whole education community should be working with us. If our goal as a global community is to ensure that every boy and girl in the world is educated and 10 to 20% of them can't see, it's in their best interest as well to join this effort. If everybody in the world wants to see road traffic accidents and deaths reduce, it's in the interest of the car companies, insurance companies, and others to join this effort. And so we are working with the World Bank, we are working with USAID. We've just published a paper by the World Economic Forum called Eyeglasses for Global Development, Bridging the Visual Divide. We also talk about the digital economy, with people now looking at their mobile phones. In public health, we used to call it the last mile problem. Now, when people can't see their cell phones and their smartphones, we call it the last foot problem, that they have all the information in the world a foot away from their eyes, but if their eyes don't connect with that phone, they can't mobile bank, they can't check the price of millet, they can't use the World Wide Web and get all the wonderful information that's available.
If I may ask a personal question, do you wear glasses?
It's funny, I don't wear glasses. I'm 55 years old and I don't even need reading glasses, and so at Vision Spring we call it refractive karma.
That's cute.
Refractive karma. Nice if you've got it. But for those who don't, Vision Spring is one effort to help improve your luck. And Jordan says it's done that both for the people who receive the glasses and also for those who sell them.
The original model of Vision Spring was based on two observations that I had as I was traveling around the developing world. One was that there were a lot of people who were losing their livelihoods because they couldn't see. And second, there were a lot of people who were underemployed or unemployed. And that was particularly true for women. And so I thought, why couldn't we just train local women to start small businesses selling eyeglasses to the neighbors who needed them to see to work? And about 60%+ of people who need glasses just need over-the-counter reading glasses. And so those were the type that we started with, because those were the easiest type. And today we have tens of thousands of women throughout the developing world who are like Avon ladies or Mary Kay ladies of eyeglasses. And they have been trained to screen for presbyopia, which is the inability to see up close, and therefore they need reading glasses. And when they have that condition, the women are trained to sell the glasses right on the spot. And if someone needs something more advanced, they're trained to refer them into the health centers and to the health clinics. And this has given women an opportunity to earn more money. And when women earn more money, a lot of virtuous things happen. Fertility rates go down, investment in education, health, and the home increases, and it becomes a virtual spiral of development.
And there hasn't been, you haven't observed pushback from the men in their lives? Like, maybe she's too empowered now, I'm uncomfortable with this?
We have seen some pushback. In the early days in India, we were working in Andhra Pradesh, and we did see some of our best entrepreneurs, as they got more and more successful, they were forced to, if you will, hang up their cleats because of the pressures that they got from their husbands or fathers. But in other cases, we had a woman, which I love this story, her name was Rama Devi, and she was a very successful entrepreneur. She was a natural saleswoman. And she came to us and said that her territory was not big enough. She wanted more territory. And so because she was earning more money, she decided to buy a motorcycle so she could expand her territory. And she hired her husband to be her driver because it wasn't appropriate for women to go alone into new villages. So not only did her husband support it, but he actually became her first employee.
And that's not the only related benefit of this effort to get glasses out to people who need them in remote areas. Jordan's colleague, Ella Goodwin, is president of Vision Spring. She was at the Skoll World Forum as well.
I started my career in reproductive health and then emergency response and spent a lot of time thinking about primary health care and front lines of health. And I think the interesting thing for me about eyeglasses in particular is that so many people are coming into hospitals and they're coming up to see specialists, ophthalmologists and optometrists for something that is really an over-the-counter product. It's a little bit like sending people to the dentist's office to go get a toothbrush. And if we can actually bring eye screening and the distribution of reading glasses down to the primary care level, we can optimize the optometrists and the ophthalmologists so that they're able to deliver that higher level care to the people who have glaucoma and cataracts and other important needs. So I think one is making sure that as we work at the primary care level, we're creating a bridge into the system and we're creating a larger front line to draw people into the healthcare system. And then the other element for me is it's not about health. So as a health, global health practitioner myself to start, is to be able to look at glasses and say it's actually the relegation of glasses to the health sector, which is a barrier. People don't like to be sick, and our eyes aren't sick. And people don't like to travel and leave 2 days of work for something that's not an emergency or a critical life-threatening condition. And there's a lot of delayed health-seeking behavior around vision. And so if we start to look at vision as a livelihood intervention, as an educational intervention, as a road safety intervention, and we take it out of the health space. We use it as creating a bridge into the health space, but we take the intervention out of the health space, it becomes much more accessible to everybody.
So that's Ella speaking with her public health hat, but she also has her growth stage business hat.
As a social enterprise, we really look to blend the best of the nonprofit practices with the best of the business practices. And like any growth stage company, we go through different challenges. So some are just thinking about partner acquisition and opening up new distribution channels and thinking about logistics in South Sudan, you know, that kind of thing. Others is thinking about human resources and human capital and growing mid-level management. Some of it's information systems with a really geographically disparate sales force. How do we gather data to make sure we're being efficient and we're hitting our targets? We're a small team in New York. We're just 8 people in the New York office, but we consider ourselves a support office. We're close to 100 people in India now. And then we have light footprint sales teams in a number of countries. Some of our main countries are India, Bangladesh, Rwanda, Kenya, Nigeria. Our approach is to support partners who have never introduced eyeglasses before and how to be successful doing that. Some people are looking, they're vision experts, they just need a really reliable supply. A lot of the markets we're in like have tons of gray market product and you can't get what you need on a consistent basis or in the volumes, or you're working through 5 layers of middlemen to purchase 500 glasses. So some of what we're looking at is how to help partners who already are focused on vision be able to expand and stretch their budgets to do much, much more and to be a turnkey supply chain solution. Others is working with partners who have a real interest in introducing vision services to be successful in doing that. And then in other instances, we're delivering the services directly ourselves. So in India, we're partnering with 62 companies. We do eye screening and eye care delivery in their employee base, in the factories, in the tea gardens, on the coffee estates. And then in other instances, it's in communities or working with governments with school programs. We're really excited in Bangladesh. We've been working there for 10 years with BRAC. So BRAC is the largest development organization in the world. And one of the extraordinary things about BRAC is they have a community health workforce of 100,000 women. 33,000 community health workers have now been trained to screen their neighbors for presbyopia and to identify advanced eye conditions to be able to refer on. These community health workers have screened 4.5 million people, and they have sold 1 million pairs of glasses.
Is anyone else or any other companies or social enterprises doing something similar?
Well, there's a whole community of people who are in the eye space, for sure. I think what's so interesting about the eye space is eye care was really focused on blindness and not refractive error and not vision impairment. So it really has been so focused on the acute conditions of cataract and neglected tropical diseases, particularly trachoma and river blindness. But increasingly, the vision community is turning to refractive error. And there are many who've been really active on vision for a long time, you know, Rotary and Lions and others. But we're a little unique in the social enterprise approach.
And of getting affordable glasses out to people.
Yeah, so our approach is radically affordable eyeglasses for people who earn less than $4 a day. And we basically found that people can afford glasses at a level of 1 to 2 days' wages. So in the markets that we're in, they're around $1.50 to $3 to the end consumer. But if people are coming up into prescriptions, then it's $5 to $10 depending. And so for us, as we think about who's that market, like who's parting with their very limited discretionary income and why, so we look at our numbers and 68% of the customers are earning less than $2.50 a day. 74% of them are in their key working years, 35 to 55, where they're going to gain many more years of earning. So I got to talk to this one gentleman, and he was a TV repairman, and he put the glasses on, and he goes, without these, I'm retired. You know, a garment worker who, she lost her job. So she was trying to thread her needles, and it was getting harder for her to thread her needle, and she was getting headaches, and she was getting slower, and she wasn't meeting her daily quotas. And she was released from the factory, and she became a domestic worker. And she lost 75% of her income in that moment. She was also the second wife in a family, and she had no children of her own. And so her value in the family was significantly diminished. And when she got her glasses, she said, I'm going back. And she said, and I'm going to let other women know that it's so simple. It's so simple.
Sometimes it doesn't take all that much to change someone's life and future, and writ large, the potential of far more people on the planet. In a century so focused on cutting-edge innovation, it turns out that a couple of bucks and 700-year-old technology can still go a long way. But so can something else, and that's getting back to at least one way that humans lived 700 years ago. So it turns out at the moment that a growing number of kids in developed countries need glasses. Why? Researchers have found that kids who spend more time outside, like at least 3 hours a day, are less likely to need glasses. They're still trying to figure out why. Is it exposure to bright light? Is it more frequent focus on distant objects? Or both? Or something else? They don't know yet. But they do know that people who spend more time indoors are more at risk for myopia. And that can thin and stretch the inner parts of the eye, which can, later in life, increase the risk of cataracts, glaucoma, retinal detachment, and blindness. So, if you're listening to this outside, great. If you're inside, maybe it's time for a walk. And that's it for this time. My thanks to Jordan Casselow and Ella Goodwin at VisionSpring. You can learn more about the group at visionspring.org. And you can find the print version of this story with photos, links, and all of our previous episodes at pri.org/century. We're also on iTunes and pretty much wherever else you get your podcasts. If you haven't yet subscribed, please do. And if you'd like to contact me, send me a note on Twitter. I'm at Mary Kay Magstad, that's MaryKayMagistad. Or you can send me an email at whoscentury@gmail.com. Whose Century Is It? Is a co-production between me and PRI's The World in cooperation with the BBC World Service and WGBH. It's funded by a grant from the Henry Luce Foundation. Back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.